Welcome to Sex, Dating, and Privacy Online. I'm Rachel Kramer-Bussell, and this is Tawna Hines, a sex and dating writer and author of FunkyBrownChick.com, Violet Blue, journalist, author, and proprietress of TinyNibbles.com, and Samita, can you say your last name? I apologize. Mukhopadhyay, who is the executive editor of FeministThing.com and author of Outdated. We are going to be talking about sex, dating, and privacy online, and you can tweet about us, hashtag sexprivacy, and there will be a chance for questions towards the end. We are going to be talking about more than social media, but I wanted to start with a quote that I think is relevant to the topic we're going to be discussing. Mark Zuckerberg was quoted as saying, "You have one identity. The days of you having a different image for your work friends or coworkers and for the other people you know are probably coming to an end pretty quickly. Having two identities for yourself is an example of a lack of integrity." And I don't want to get into the details of the lack of integrity part of that, but I think the question of what kinds of identities we have online and having multiple identities in different places online and having a public and a private life is something that we are going to address. So, Violet, I'm going to start with you. Can you lay out some of the core issues going on right now around privacy, especially as it relates to sex and dating?
Absolutely. That quote pisses me off so much. It's such a dick move quote. Because that's obviously like someone who comes from such a place of privilege that they don't need to worry about what other people are doing with their data, or they don't need to worry about, like, this is someone who isn't thinking globally about what happens when people's identity footprints get put together in one place and what type of risks that puts users at. So just that quote just kind of sets me off. I think that a lot of kind of what's happening right now with the consciousness around sex and dating is that a lot of online, like digitally specifically, is that a lot of people are realizing that as they're starting to explore not just whether or not they want to have one identity, multiple identities, or, you know, how they're merging or not merging different parts of their lives online, is the growing consciousness of the fact that all of our identity footprints are starting to become really, really closely tied with one another beyond our control. And that our data is being used and moved around beyond our control. And that's coming up in a lot of really, really unexpected ways. So this is talking about, you know, whether you're using a site like OkCupid or whether you're using a site like Facebook or whether you're just trying to use a couple of sites and not have everything put together. The other part of that conversation is the companies themselves and not just what they're doing with the data, like who they're selling your data to and things like that, but also, you know, what's going to happen with the future of that data? Is that company going to be sold? You know, like Posterous just got bought by Twitter today is a really good example. So all of the data and the identity footprint that you have in that is going to Twitter. And so when you think about this in a dating context, it's... Let me tell you a couple stories. Can I?
Yes.
Okay. So one example is last week, I don't know if you guys saw this in the news, but this really sucks. This guy had been married, and he didn't get a divorce, and he was seeing someone new, and then went to marry someone new, and Facebook, because of a lot of the new algorithms, saw that he had been talking to these two different women, and was like, "Hey, you all know each other. You should be friends." And none of them knew about, like, he was basically kind of cheating, and that was how it came out. And he was actually a county official, so. This little algorithm friend suggestion ruined a lot of people's lives in a way that they weren't able to control, essentially. So that's one example. Another interesting example is, so I'm on OkCupid, right? And I'm dating. I have a massive identity footprint online at this point. And I think everybody does, but they just don't know it. And Google recently changed their privacy policies in that they made all of their privacy policies one, but one of the things that they did was they took all of the accounts on all of their 70 different companies that they owned, and they mashed all of these accounts together, and they matched everything up. And so, you know, I'm dating, I'm meeting people online and things like that, and I was like chatting with this guy, and he was like, "Hey, you should give me your Gtalk, like, and we can chat, you know, off of OkCupid." And I'm like, "Okay, if I give him that, he's going to see my Google profiles. Like, all of them. And that is so much more information about me than I am ready to unpack to a total stranger." And just that made me so angry at Google for doing that, because it made so many things much more discoverable in a way that not only did I want to control, but I wanted to be much more of an organic dating process. And so I don't think we fully realize the impact of what these identity footprints have done to the way that we mate and date and do courtship. So that's my start.
Tawana, we had been discussing earlier something, and I think one of the things I want to address today is the fact that even people who do spend a lot of time online don't always know about some of these potential places where their information could show up. And I count myself amongst those people. And you talked about a commenting issue on your blog. Can you tell that story? And if you have any other examples of what Violet was just talking about.
But as far as privacy goes.
Yeah.
That, yeah, sure. So when we were preparing for this panel, I said, oh, it's kind of like when this happened to me. I have a friend, Dutch journalist, who comes to visit me in New York. And we play and we have fun together when he comes to visit and things like that. And he's commented on my site and different things like that. And using his email address, but in the regular WordPress one where you don't have to put your name and things like that, just his email address or whatever. And then so I updated my site and used Discus, which is a commenting system most of you probably heard of. And you may not know this, but if you've had used Discus on a site that didn't previously use it, it automatically tags that email address and shows your Discus profile. And so where he put a comment that said, next time I come to New York, I'll remember to bring two boxes of condoms. All of a sudden, his face, his name, and everything was attached to a comment that he'd left previously, prior to me installing Discus. So something that I think that brings up, what Violet was saying, that it's not just this idea of privacy and what we want to do. It's that a lot of this is beyond our control. I had no way of knowing that it would sweep all of my old comments, like 30,000 comments on the site, all of my old comments, and put faces and names with all of those. And he sure as hell had no way of knowing that all of a sudden his profile was going to be linked to something he'd written weeks ago. And so it's the sense that when we think about our privacy and our online footprint and all of these things, we aren't the only people who are controlling this. And I'm sure you guys all have examples that are similar to that. And so when we talk about the core of the conversation and like, dating and privacy and sex and how all that fits together, I think it's impossible to talk about that without looking at how unhealthy of a relationship America has with sex in general. And so a lot of the things that when we talk about privacy coming out and, oh, if you're a babysitter and they find out that you're also a dominatrix, that somehow says something about you. And so I think a lot of the conversation focuses on if we had a healthier view towards sexuality and sex in general, people wouldn't fear, losing their job or finding out that, oh, I have a playmate on the side or different things like that. It's that the way we look at these things really filters in the way that we perceive we have to and we want to have separate identities sometimes.
Towards the end, I do want to talk about kind of the future of privacy and where these issues are going and whether they're going to become more of a concern or less of a concern. But I kind of want to lay out what the concerns specifically are. Samita, I wanted to know if you can talk about, is this a gendered issue? Is it more fraught for women or men, or is that part of this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the title of this panel, which seemed really current when we put the panel together, but is now a pretty outdated story of Anthony Weiner and the kind of infamous Weinergate, where he, got caught sending a direct message of a picture of his wiener. I think that, so a couple of things. So yeah, I think everything's gendered. And I do think that the way that, identity kind of is formed online and the way that gender is kind of represented online definitely, impacts the way that you get treated, right? Like if you're a woman online, the way that commenters interact with you, the way that your information is shared, all of that is impacted based on your gender. And if you don't believe me, try and be an outspoken feminist writer online, and you can have my inbox for a day. I think that and depending on the kind of woman you are, right, online, so if you represent yourself, like, in a certain, like, if I changed my blogger name to, the slutty Samita or something, and still wrote the same content, the way that it gets read online is going to be completely different. So I do think that, on a fundamental level, people are treated differently based on different, like, race and class and ethnic and ability kind of assumptions about who they are. I think this larger question of, you know, the role that sexuality and kind of, Tawana, what you're saying, the role that kind of sexuality and, like, our fear of sexuality plays in it also, I think, extends to a fear of, like, female sexuality. So, you know, Wienergate, it's like, or similar situations like that, it's like these guys who were supposed to be role models are maligned by these women who were sluts. Right. And so and that's kind of, so it's this moment, this opportunity for the woman to kind of like get publicity. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, you know, to get publicity and kind of, you know, raise their profile in some way. But they automatically go into the like slut category, whereas these politicians, they're just like, oh, my God, like you're, you know, your boys will be boys behavior is now on display for the world to see. So, you know, I think that so obviously gender does kind of, you know, impact the way that we understand a lot of these sex scandals, right, and the assumptions that we make about them. But then there's this larger question, and I think which almost might, you know, just to be provocative, is that I think while it's, you know, it was like really problematic what happened in terms of Anthony Weiner and the way that that conversation happened, and similarly the way that public figures are called out for their kind of sexual deviant behavior on the side, a lot of them are like sexist pigs. Like a lot of the guys that get called out and for doing this stuff are you know, it's like they kind of should get called out. And they're not, that's not even the worst, right? Like people in the past used to engage in much worse behavior. We just didn't have the technology to out them in the same way. So how do you kind of hold both of those spaces, right? Of saying like, you know, I'm not saying that Anthony Weiner shouldn't be sending pictures of himself, but he's also a public official and he probably shouldn't be sending them over Twitter, right? So I don't necessarily, it's kind of on him that he got caught. But at the same time, like, how do we kind of use it as a tool to, like, we want to expose people that are assholes, right? But at the same time, like, then where does the kind of privacy question? Yes, I answered your question with a question. And, sorry.
Well, and I think for a lot of people, the internet is a space that we can be open about sexuality, in part because we are using either alternative identities or anonymity. And I think sometimes we are assuming that we're anonymous, and that's not always the case. There's a blogger, The Beautiful Kind, thebeautifulkind.com, and she was blogging and writing heavily under that name about BDSM and sex work. And through, I believe that she had signed up for Twitter. And at one point in the process, even though she was making not using her real name, at some point she had given her real name as a registration issue. And her employer, through a search, found that, and she was outed because of that. And I think that's an example, and this is different from your example, where someone actively tried to protect their identity because they wanted to have this alternate persona online, and that failed. And I think that there are a lot of people who want to have that kind of freedom, whether it's writing a sex blog or, you know, you have a regular job and then you also want to be on FetLife or on OkCupid or on whatever and not have your full name and all your data there, you know, connected to that other profile. So I think that's something that we're going to be seeing more of. And Tawana, you kind of said, I mean, I think if I'm correct, that there's kind of nothing we can do about this. Did you say that?
Did I say that there's nothing we can do about our profiles coming together?
No, but did you say?
I did. Violet was saying that one of the points of concern is that this occurs beyond our control.
Yeah, beyond our control. That's,
yeah, exactly. That was the first. I don't think it needs to be that way. It's that's how it's playing itself out. And so, yeah.
Well, so I guess my question to you guys is, like, what can people who are concerned about this, what can they do to be proactive and to protect themselves before it gets to that point where, like, their real name is being attached to something like this? Because, I mean, does that mean that, in this case, that person should not be using their regular email address in a comment like that? I mean, what advice would you give to people who want to make sure that they can't, when they're in certain spaces online, can't be traced back to their...
Well, what's happening is that wherever we are in the world, we are in societies where we need to have split identities, and that is just simply the way that it is. Regardless of whatever our feelings are about our sexual expression and how we live our sexual lives, our relationship lives, our personal lives, and our political lives, we often need to keep that separate from our outward identities or from our professions. And this is a matter of fact about being human in our culture. And it is directly at odds with what's going on with the data sharing that is happening with a lot of the social sites. So we're at a very interesting time for all of that. And, you know, on one hand, part of me is, you know, thinks about, you know, politicians and you know, especially lawmakers in particular that you know, royally fuck up with, you know, getting their sexuality out online in ways that are egregious that we would probably never do in our own lives. Like that, I kind of look at that and I'm like, that's natural selection, right? Because, like, we've been doing this for what, like 10 years longer?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and I've watched every sexual privacy phobial unload and explode on the internet than you can imagine. And, you know, stuff like that, like, I just, that's amateur hour kind of stuff. So on one hand, there's that. But then on the other hand, there are a hell of a lot of people that are really not aware with what, you know, how they can protect themselves and how they can proceed, and the fact that it is a very, very shifting landscape right now. So awareness is really the key. And, you know, there's only so much, you know, like, I can do as much activism as I can, but that doesn't actually change the conversation. And I think, you know, one of the things you were talking about earlier was that, you know, there's a lot of shame about sexuality in our culture, and if that changed, it would be helpful. But that, I think, is a separate conversation than, you know, getting the companies that are in the human space trying to apply logical technologies to it and sell stuff and keep their businesses alive and sell their stock and their shares and things like that, and making them have to adapt to us for a change instead of us having to adapt to them. It's a much larger conversation. In the meantime, there's a lot of things you can do. The Electronic Frontier Foundation is actually working on a campaign right now about security and privacy on dating websites. And I think that this is just the beginning, and it's really, really interesting and exciting. There's a post that I highly recommend you guys look up. It's called Six Heartbreaking Truths About Online Dating Privacy. It's kind of scary and eye-opening. It's things like, you know, sites like OkCupid that don't use HTTPS, which means that essentially a lot of the pages are unsecure and can be looked at. A lot of dating profile sites also are indexable by Google, which I don't think a lot of people are aware of. So, for instance, like OkCupid, it, by default, it's a public profile, and it's not really something that they state up front. So that data is searchable. Also, there isn't I don't think there's enough awareness about the fact that you can legally request that they delete your data, and they have to do it. Because once you start dating and you move on, all that stuff stays there. And in the cases of, like, OkCupid, for instance, even when you shut down your profile, if you don't force them to delete the data, they actually keep it around just in case you're going to come back and, like, fire up your profile again. So there's a lot of things there. And, you know, photos are searchable and indexable. And then also, I mean, it sounds kind of bad, but you kind of have to think a little bit like a bad person or a hacker in order to keep yourself protected. I'm going to give you a terrible example of something I did. But this is just kind of give you an idea of how you can think about protecting yourself and really what's out there. So I was getting ready to go on a date, a blind date with this guy I met off OkCupid. And, you know, he was being very, very careful about, you know, because you play this little dance of what information you share and what URLs you give. And, you know, it's, you know what I mean? And because, you know, you just want to be really careful and you don't really know who you're dealing with. And he had sent me an image of a motorcycle, one of his motorcycles, because we were talking about motorcycles, and because I was buying a new bike. And so he sent me an image, and it was on Imgur, which is fairly random, like, and it was a deep link, so it was just like straight to the photo. And I was like, oh, that's nice, that's very careful of him. It turns out he's a former Google employee. Interesting. But what I did was I took the photo and I put it into Google's new image search engine. And it found all instances of the photo online, which led me to a motorcycle forum that he has a profile on. And on that profile, some of the pages were locked, but not all of his posts were locked. And a number of his posts had more information about him, out of which I got his first name, his last name, I got his Gmail address. From there, I found him on LinkedIn. So I found out where he worked. I found out who his connections were. From there, I found a lot of his other social profiles. The date turned out fine. He's really cool. I don't know if I'll see him again, but I found out way too much information and I felt completely fucking creepy. I really did. I mean, I was glad because I'm like, okay, this is a person and I'm not going to get, you know, axe murdered by someone I met on OkCupid. But at the same time, it really freaked me out. It was just one hot link to a single photo that he had of a motorcycle. No license plate, no address, no people in the photo, nothing. And if someone can take, and, you know, and I'm a low-level hacker, right? Like, that, if someone takes that information, I mean, think about if someone really had bad intent, like how much more they could get on you. And yeah, it's enough to make you paranoid. No.
Well, I think that also goes to the question, I mean, there's both what you publicly post on the internet, but also what you privately share that could, you know, like if you wanted to, you could have put that information out there and said, you know, this is this guy and this is his motorcycle. You know, of how we gauge when we're in these spaces, who to trust.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that because those private conversations could be made public pretty easily.
Admittedly, when I went to see him, I gave a friend his information just in case because I was going alone.
I mean, I guess one question is, do we think this is a good thing? The fact that even people who are trying to be pretty incognito aren't necessarily. Do you think that's a positive thing in terms of online culture?
I can't say whether it's good or bad because it just is. I don't think I can take a moral stance on that because it just is kind of a fact of the landscape right now.
Okay.
Feel free to judge me, though. I'm fine with that. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
It would have been weird, don't you think? We're going to be dragging you up to the microphone for your questions.
Well,
your question was like, do you think that? I find it weird when I Google someone and nothing comes up. But I mean, I think, have they deliberately done that? I don't think you can deliberately do that except just not be active online.
Well, also, is it like a really common name? You know, I mean, there's people that you can Google and you have to get through 10 pages to find anything close to being that person. Not everybody has a weird name like me.
I never believe on OkCupid there's like a question that says, do you Google people before your first date? And all these people always answer it no. And I'm like, there is just no way that you're not Googling somebody before you go out with them. I just feel like that's such a standard at this point of doing it. But I almost feel relieved if they don't have a Google profile. I'm like, you don't know I'm a feminazi yet.
Wait, that doesn't mean they're not using.
Yeah,
they're not
true.
Googling
no,
you.
It's true. It's true. But maybe they don't care about that kind of stuff. So just...
This somewhat goes to the question we were talking about earlier about the future of privacy and where some of this. This is going. Amanda Marcotte asked on Twitter, could the loss of anonymity push us towards being a less prudish culture? And I think it's an interesting question because all of us, and well, I can speak for myself, but we're all publicly associated with sex. Like, that's part of the work that we do. And for me, my answer to some of these questions has been to be kind of as public as possible so that, you know, instead of someone being like, ooh, I found this out about you, I'm like, yeah, I know because I wrote about it. But I don't think that's a solution for everyone. Not everyone wants to. I mean, I think if everyone did want to be that public, that would change the conversation in a significant way. But I don't think that everyone should have to be or would want to be as public as the people on this panel. So what do you guys think about that question? And kind of do you think that this desire for anonymity is lessening as more people are more active online?
I wouldn't say that I think that the desire for anonymity is lessening. I think that, I love this question because it goes back to, I really truly believe that so much of what we talk about with when we say privacy and sex, we don't talk about privacy and the types of food that we like. It's not this political thing. You know what I mean? And the example I always give, that if I held up my elbow and I asked you, is this my elbow or is this my knee? People would think, what's wrong with you? It's your elbow. Of course you should know your elbow. But if I ask you, what does the cervix do? You know, how many pills are in a pack of birth control? you know, one of these birth control, whatever, like how many pills are in a typical pack? Is it 30? Is it 10? Is it 40? Like, we have such a like blind spot when it comes to sex, sexuality, all of these things. And you can't talk about privacy without saying how that folds into it, because the sense that we feel we need to be private is that we will be, quote, quote, judged by these things. So my view towards it is that the more we share, the more we kind of lose that sense of this is a shameful thing, or that there's something bad about it, or it means something horrible about me if I say I like whatever, you know? The caveat that I would add to that is that I think for everyone on this panel, we're all unique identifiers. Like, try and find a second Samita Mukhopadhyay, or a second Violet Blue, or a second Twana Hines, or a second Rachel Kramer Bustle. It's like, so we're all women who are writing about sex and uniquely identifiable as us. And so if you go on a date with Rachel KB, it's her, and you can find everything about their pictures of her being spanked or what have you.
Thank you.
So, Google it. But so I do think that it's a good thing if we're more open. And the caveat that I wanted to add to that is that I do realize that that's from a stance of privilege to say, because like, we are writers about sexuality. We do this for our work. It's not like we're elementary school teachers. You know, it's not like we're, you know, therapists or something like that, that like our line of work allows us to be more public than other lines of work. And so I don't think the answer is that everybody needs to be sharing everything all the time about their sexuality. For those of us that are in this space, I think it helps. And it helps all of us, I think, if we do that. That's my view towards it.
I want to live in your world. I really do. It takes a really special kind of person to be able to be open and to live a really, really public life, especially around something like sexuality, gender, and all of the things that can get people killed in other countries, and get people killed in this country as well. So I want this world. I want this world very bad. But I don't think this world can afford to live in an economy that doesn't have anonymity in it, for whatever reasons. And I think that not a lot of people are ready, and a lot of people will never be ready to have any front-facing part of their sexuality out there for whatever their reasons. And I think that the part of changing the conversation that I want to do is giving people the tools that can empower them to make the necessary decisions that help them self-individuate their sexuality through these mazes of security, privacy, and personal safety. So,
well, and I also think that, and speaking as myself, or anyone who is public in any way, not just about sex, I mean, I still think you should be able to use tools like online dating and not necessarily have to be doing it as your full public identity. And, you know, I've run into that where I have my photo, but I don't have my name on there. But if you know what I look like, I mean, that happened to me plenty of times. And it created this divide where I didn't really feel like I could be just whoever I wanted to be in this online dating space unless I used a different photo of someone who wasn't me.
Which would be weird.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I think, like, having, you know, that's a difference, too. Go on, Ben.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing because, you know, trying to figure out how much you want to reveal to people online has become a really, really complicated conversation that you have with yourself. You know, it's like, you know, for instance, like, so in a lot of the online dating I've been doing lately, like, I've found profiles of really well-known people in technology, and it's been really interesting to see how they handle their different profiles. And I've found profiles of people in porn. You know, I've found Peter Eckworth's profile from kink.com, you know, and some other people. And it's very interesting to see who's upfront about what and where they make those individual decisions about what they do with their sort of gradual reveal with their dates. It's really, really fascinating, and it is such a set of personal decisions, you know?
Yeah, and I totally agree that it's a person. We've got a microphone up there, too, so you can get it. Personal decision. And I think when you talk about, like, the community and things like that, I don't think it's coincidence that a lot of the language that we use about our privacy and about whether or not we come out is borrowed from the LGBT community. And I would say the same parallel is if someone wants to be in the closet, it's their fucking right to be so, you know what I mean? And if someone wants to come out, more power to them. And so I say it's the same with us, too. It's that it's like...
Well, it's a struggle.
Sexuality.
You don't want to be not genuine.
And I...
either.
I think, especially with online dating sites versus something like a blog, I think people don't know how public that is. Like, they think of it as its own kind of bubble that they're not necessarily going to be identified. I mean, unless they put all their identifying information on there. And I don't think that's as known, like the stuff that Violet was talking about. Okay, new questions. Can you talk louder, or is that on?
Yeah. Okay. It's very low.
Okay.
I mean, I think this is like the chicken egg question of the internet, right? It's, you know, I've always wondered, as, you know, a political writer, has the fact that, you know, there is such a kind of, there's such a strong current of young women being vocal politically online, has that actually changed the way that people perceive young women and their opinions, right? Or has it just given an opportunity for people to be louder about how they don't agree with it? And so, you know, and I think that what is, I think that technology is a reflection of the culture around us. So, you know, while a lot of these things seem really salacious right now, I think eventually we'll get to a point. I mean, politicians are such a unique example because they're always so out of touch with new technology. I mean, you know, Brownback did like railed against this young high school student because of a tweet that she, you know, put on Twitter. So, like, they are so clueless about how technology kind of works. But I do think that our culture is changing, right? Our culture is becoming more accepting. We're, you know, our culture, like, not just around sexuality, but around gender and around a variety of issues. And of course, you know, we still have like a lot of work to do. But I do think that as a result, the technology is, you know, is also shifting in that same way. And, you know, I would say that the positive benefits of sharing this information and the connections that it's kind of facilitated between people is much more powerful. Just the salacious examples get the most media attention, and I just think that that's going to get boring. I think at a certain point, people are going to be like, everyone had that like Twitter hack situation, you know, that little Twitter genital situation, whatever, you know. And I think it's going to get boring. And I also, you know, and I'm also curious to see if, you know, increased exposure does in fact lead to healthier conversations about sexuality, and around us not holding public people to such a high standard of what is acceptable in terms of sexual behavior. Because I do think that's changing too. I mean, if you look at most of the sex scandals, don't actually affect whether these people are reelected most of the time, right? So, and I think that's interesting to think about, you know, even though it completely captivates the national imagination when it happens. So,
what you said about what people are liking on Facebook reminded me that one way I Google stalk, or not Google stalk, but I
shadow,
cyber stalk,
shadow,
you know, find more information, do my research on people I'm interested in, is I look at who they're following on Twitter. And I was looking at someone I was dating, and they were following maybe like 100 people, and like 80 were porn stars. So I got to find out who their favorite porn stars were. And it was really interesting because we hadn't had that conversation in person, and that's information I wouldn't have necessarily known. But I also think, you know, I don't think people are thinking about, is someone looking at my every move on the internet in that way? But they could be, unless you have it hidden in some way.
My question is, my company actually is building communications infrastructure, digital communication infrastructure, and we're trying to look at how to make this flexible and socially integrated and still have respect for privacy. We talk a lot about integrating with dating tools. So one of the things that you said earlier, Violet, was that you wanted these companies to have to listen to us for a change, listen to the people. So what are the features, what are the things that you want from a service like that that will make
building in the understanding that people want anonymity and may need anonymity in different parts of their lives? I mean, I think we all saw the humongous fuck up of Google Plus you know, with the real name situation. And if you haven't, it basically, Google launched their social site, Google Plus, and it revealed that what they wanted, one of the things that they were wanting to do was get, you know, basically like a real profile on their users and start to do away with pseudonyms or names that didn't look like real names, essentially. For whatever reasons, I think I have all my own tinfoil hat ideas as to why. But one of the things that came up was that there was a lot of talk from Google's side about, you know, why you would want people to be real names or not have anonymity online. And a lot of their arguments really just fell flat and didn't have any real-life examples to back them up. And so what it also kind of revealed was this sort of, like, culture in a lot of social media sites about having that real name. And it's interesting to look at the examples of sites that work really well and sites that don't work really well and sites that have, long long-tail build on them. And the ones that embrace different aspects of allowing someone to control their lives, their anonymity in that respect, that I think is a really powerful cornerstone of the whole conversation. And controls over data and data awareness and letting people know, you know, what's going to be indexable, what's going to be front-facing, and giving them, you know, are there different views on, you know, OkCupid where you can see, like, this is what your profile looks to someone else. And, you know, allowing just really simplified, easier UI for user control for people who aren't as geeky as people like I am that will, like, mess around with it and be worried about what can be seen and things like that. I also would just love to intro you to the people at the EFF, because that's a lot of the activism that they're doing with this campaign, with the data security, with dating. It's fascinating, and I think that this is really a big direction that they're moving in. So, oh, right on. Cool.
Your question? But do you think that also means, like, don't email something that you wouldn't want the whole world to see? Because I think that's kind of unrealistic. I'm not saying that's bad advice. I'm just saying that
Google can be subpoenaed, though. I mean, think about it. Like, you know, OkCupid, like, data on OkCupid, you know, in a divorce proceeding, you know, OkCupid can be subpoenaed for that information. I love your paranoia. I love it.
That's great.
It's very dear to my heart. It's very similar to mine, in that, you know, when you're talking, I think about, and this is going to sound like a really weird analogy at first, but bear with me. It reminds me of safer sex practices in gay porn. And basically, the way that they proceed in gay porn is that they behave as if everyone is already HIV positive. And which is why there are no contact of fluids in gay porn, and why the genres where people don't wear condoms are really, really taboo and super frowned upon in the culture. And that's why you always see condoms in gay porn. And that analogy is sort of the way that I drive on the internet, is behaving as if my data is already being exposed, especially by companies that I don't trust. But it's really a case-by-case basis, and there are times when you just are going to have to decide that you're giving up certain things and what sort of things that you're okay with giving up. So it's interesting. It's an interesting question. But, I worked at Fleshbot for I was a second hire to Fleshbot, and then John and I ran it for 3 or 4 years before we bailed, and the site completely changed after we left. But we had really, this was really around the beginning. This was like 2003 to 2007 was when we ran the site. So this was early on in the big sex blogging craze and people having different identities online and trying to manage their sexuality and their real lives. And, I mean, it was a weekly thing watching people get their shit exposed over and over and over again for whatever reasons, because no matter what they were doing, something wasn't being covered up somewhere, or someone had a vendetta, or someone had a bad divorce, or something along those lines. And it was just sort of a like, oh, you're trying to hide your identity online. Good luck with that. And so there's been a lot of bitter lessons. I don't know.
The other thing I would add to that before we quickly go to the next question is I always say these companies aren't privacy companies. Like, they're not in the business of private. Like, that's not their business. You know what I mean? And so I think when we go into it, and I love that analogy of proceed as if, you know, the danger's already there.
Yeah.
Also proceeding as if it's not there. They're not there trying to make money on privacy. You know what I mean?
Like, no.
That's not their primary
privacy
goal.
Is not in their best interest,
yeah,
for
exactly.
their business
exactly.
at all.
Like,
not your
yeah.
privacy anyway. Your question?
As time progresses, society changes for better or for worse, literally. So we roller coaster. And sometimes that we're doing things and being proud of ourselves and our human nature and just out celebrating or whatever and doing a fully humanly acceptable thing that later on may become not socially acceptable, maybe 10 years, 20 years down the line. And that's not going away this time. Like,
mm-hmm.
We have pictures from the 70s, but we have everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you glad YouTube wasn't around when you did all that stupid shit when you were a kid? I think that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think the missing piece in this is media literacy, right? And really, you know, kind of teaching, like adding curriculum, especially for young people that are sifting through a lot of this stuff, but even for older people that like take everything as fact, right? Where like most of the things you read online, you should probably take with a grain of salt, you know? And I think that's the missing piece of how we're going to move forward with this, because I think everyone is right in saying that our information is already out there, so now it's a matter of managing it and figuring out the best the kind of harm reduction in the situation,
right.
Like what's going to have the least kind of negative impact, and I feel this often because I mentor a lot of young women in blogging, and I'm like, you should say the things that you want to say, you should feel empowered, like don't be afraid to be who you are and say what you want, but I also don't want I also recognize, you know, I've committed my life to this path. Like, if I wanted to change careers, it's not there.
Yeah, you have to be activated for yourself.
Right.
But I also think the difference is if people have only grown up with an internet presence, you know, from when they can, you know, type or whenever their parents let them go online, I think that generation that has that, everyone is going to be doing it, or almost everyone, so it's going to be more normalized. Like, I think the power, maybe I could be wrong, but I think the power of something like a nude photo or a drunken photo or whatever to harm someone, if 20% of the, you know, if a lot of other people have that as well, like, I think it's going to have less of an impact as time goes on.
The thing I like about this comment, too, is that remembering that the way that we see the world is the way that we see the world. And so it's like when you think of international context or kind of thinking of how we see things isn't the same as everyone else maybe seeing it or other people as well. And the quick story that I'll tell is
when I was living, I lived in the Netherlands for a while, whatever. When I was living over there, I remember the next door neighbors put a window in their house or whatever, and it was really close to like our hallway to our bedroom. So if they were like walking, they can actually see into our bedroom, which is this weird thing or whatever. And I remember my roommate, who was Dutch, said, "Oh, you know, that's a totally illegal window." And she went off, and she was really upset or whatever. And it was like, illegal window, and she's like, "You have to get permission before you can install a window, you know, and your place, you know, so they can see whether or not it's approved to be placed there." I go, "I don't think that would fly in the U.S. because we're like, oh, this is my house. I can put a window where I want to. You know, we're very big on, you know, personal rights." And she's like, "But it is a personal right, my right to privacy. That's why we have to get approved before we can put windows." So even that view of just kind of like privacy is the way that we see privacy and the value we place in it and what that means to us is very culturally specific.
Your question?
Hi. My company is building a mobile dating product right now, and one of the things, first of all, it's mobile, so that can be that's my rule. One of the things we're thinking about is how to balance people being truly anonymous on dating sites and dating products, and also that people have a real need to verify the identity, or that the person they're going to see actually has an identity. So you guys touched on this a little bit about how the first thing
are you talking about from the experience of your users or from your side in terms of verifying the identities of your users for your product?
Because
that's an engineering issue, I think.
That's an engineering issue, right? So from the perspective of the user who's going to be meeting somebody and saying, "Oh, okay, this person, who I don't necessarily know their name, I can't necessarily look at their pictures, but, you know, I feel comfortable with them. What are the limits, you know, in an opposite kind of thing that I can do with a tool that don't necessarily violate somebody's name?"
It depends on how much of a service you're trying to provide to your users in terms of what they're looking for verifying someone else's identity. I mean, if you take a site, like if you take like Grindr, for instance, you know, those requirements are really fairly minimal for the type of hooking up that those people are doing. If you're talking about like doing something that's more along the lines of like Match.com, where you're like, "We're going to get you married," you know, and it's a much more involved process, then I think you can set more stringent limitations and provide more information. That's cool.
Kind of in the middle of, yeah. But, you know, we certainly don't want to violate any privacy and get away from any information, but we also want to make sure that, you know,
yeah. Well, I mean, give users fine-grained controls over what they can and can't show, and then also let them know that, you know, if they don't show certain things, they may not get dates. So that's one angle.
You mean in terms of teaching people what to share with with other people so that they don't get into that situation?
Well, it's like you said, it's a harm reduction question in many ways for our communities, acknowledging that the harm is there and then taking the steps that we can to mitigate the harm that does to our community and individuals. And as sex ed is really screwed up in America.
That's why I asked that question.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
If you're interested in a resource, ISIS, that's out there, but you guys out west.
ISIS.org.
ISIS.org is ISIS.inc/inc.org. It's their website. And if you Google tech, sex, USA, they put out a white paper that looks at sexuality, technology, and all of these things as it relates to youth. And so seeing how youth do this. So when they ask young people, how do you find out information about, say, birth control, menstruation, all of these things, 89% said online. That's where I go. And so I do think for those that are interested in, like, making sure that young people have harm reduction techniques and information that they need, we incorporate social media and internet in that as well. So if you Google how to use a condom, you shouldn't only get Trojan, like, we like our condoms because these are fun or whatever, but actually, like, make sure you check the expert, like, get information about how to do that correctly.
I think a lot of those companies, too, have been really good about taking steps to educate the people that are buying their products. Like, a lot of condom companies and more sex toy companies are putting actual health and sexual information online. A resource I want to recommend for you is a nonprofit organization called Without My Consent, and disclaimer, I'm an advisor. But what it is it's a United States nonprofit organization that's made up mostly of lawyers that are putting together a free online resource, and we're building it. It's getting really close. That basically helps people find legal paths to justice for when information about them has been shared online without their consent. You know, specifically things like isanyoneup.com kind of stuff, to the angry ex, or, you know, the girlfriend revenge kind of thing. And because the laws are different, as you know, in every single state, it's like crazy. And the remedies are so hard to find, and it's mostly women. But it's worth looking into. We have a ton of resources on the site now. So
I think that's a really interesting question, which, I mean, we've been mostly talking about what we voluntarily share, but, there is also the other side of, you know, someone looking to do harm to you or to just put information out that is not the information that you would be putting out about yourself, and how we can control that. Okay.
Thank you.
And just so you know, it's ISIS-INC.org, and they're at ISIS.org on Twitter. I mean, I definitely see that parallel, as well as the parallel of, like, people who are public about whatever health issue they have, drawing a community around whatever situation it is. But I'm not sure, like, the answer to your question of where to go, like, how to deal with that issue of people linking you then to whether it's diabetes or to whatever your sexual interest is. I don't know exactly the answer to that.
I would say it's similar in the fact, and the two things that come to mind most immediately, the community aspect. So there is FetLife, where if you're into BDSM, you can find other people in your community. Like, you can Google Munch plus your city and find people that are interested in linking up with other people in the community and things like that. Or whatever sexual identities, plural, you have, you can find that online. And so it's always nice to feel like, oh, there are other people too. So that's a positive thing. And then as far as the employer thing as well, I mean, we do not have the laws that should, in my opinion, be in place to protect LGBT workers. A lot of the civil rights that protect women, that protect people of color, religion, things like that, don't necessarily extend to LGBT. So if you're active in a community online and outing yourself as a gay man or a lesbian, then you're also at risk at work as far as, like, your employment situation. So I do think that there's some parallels in those two.
I think the only thing I would add to that is that community fosters tolerance, which I think is really important, but also community equals resources. So the more you have, you know, a place or places where people can find people of similar interests or other things that make them feel a little bit less alone, you're going to find people who also have more information and safety information and places they can go to help get their problem solved. Thank you.
All right. I think we have time for one more question.
Well, marvelous panelists. This is really incredible. I'm so glad that four of you are here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, you talked before about the whole privacy thing about one being surprised when you don't find things about people online. I have tons of friends who aren't on Facebook, who really have almost no footprint out there. And of course, then there's the rest of us, you know, who are things, who have but the big footprint. But the biggest thing, and this is what I try to teach, I'm a sex educator here in Austin, when I talk to my students, I actually say that it's don't even know what you tell it. The internet does not know how to masturbate or if I masturbate. Because I've never told it that. Nobody can Google it, nobody can find it, nobody, unless they bug my household. So I always tell them, whatever you put out there, that's what's going to be out there. So only share what you're going to really feel comfortable with that. And that, yes, even though I'm afraid it does go as far as email, I think I have about 10 emails that I really don't want ever to show up in the paper. But that's, I haven't created any of those since 2005.
I mean, I think it's a question of balancing, you know, your need or desire to send an email to someone, because I'll go on the record, I probably have thousands of emails that I wouldn't want to be on TV or whatever, but even though I'm aware that, you know, is a possibility, please don't try to hack my email. like, it's still, because I don't know of another way to communicate with, I mean, aside from texting, you know, so I don't know what the answer to that is. We have to wrap up, so does everyone want to give like 1 minute of I don't know, any advice you have for people or thoughts on what we just discussed?
Didn't you want to say something?
I mean,
my parting thought, yeah, and we'll go down the line. My parting thought would just be for everyone is be very proud and happy about who you are sexually. No matter who you're doing, what you're doing, how often you're doing it, whatever, you personally be extremely proud of that. You know, as long as it's consenting between adults, plural, singular, what have you, go for it. Get your rocks off. Have fun and love it. And it's your personal decision to decide how public or private or whatever you want to be about that. But no matter what that decision is about privacy or whatever, the decision to be proud about it is separate. And so I would encourage everyone to be very proud of whatever your sexuality is. Thank you.
Just a couple of things that I would say. Practice compassion. Love your scars. Love your gift. And no offense to the people who are making companies in this room, but to those people who are entrepreneurs, the only thing I want to say is change the world or shut the fuck up. It's been a long weekend.
I think, you know, I totally understand all of this, like, paranoia around privacy, and I appreciate it. And, you know, as somebody who's completely, you know, just this is who I am and this is the way it is and this is the life that I've chosen, people, all of us, manage our identities in ways we don't even realize. And the things that we put on Facebook, they're incredibly strategic decisions. And I have that same faith for young people that they also are younger than myself. People that are, you know, there's this, like, panic around the amount of information that you're sharing. I think that we are growing up in a culture that is so full of these tools that we actually make a lot of these decisions already. We just may not realize that we're doing it. And so to kind of trust that a little bit and recognize that everything that you're seeing online is somebody thought about it before they put it there, right? Whatever the intent of that thought was. So knowing that, you should probably, in terms of dating, take what most people write in their profiles with a serious grain of salt.
Thank you.
My big lesson in online dating.
Thank you, everyone. And you can continue the sex privacy hashtag if you have more thoughts or questions. Thanks.
And we can always respond to you on Twitter, too. Yeah.